Mills, was Lucy out in the hall there? Okay. Gives me great pleasure to turn this back to Lucian, who's the introductions. Now we have two presentations and then the panel, and we can get you to lunch at 12 o'clock. And I've had a suggestion that we have such an auspicious group here. Be nice to have a group here, introduce themselves, so you know where, who's here and who you might want to talk to. So if we have time during the panel session, we'll go around the room and do that as well. If not, we'll do that when we start after. You have a wonderful lunch awaiting you at 12 o'clock. Thanks to our host, Lucian. Take it over.
Brian, thank you very much. I mentioned a Web 3.0 in the beginning. And if Web 3.0 is to be well-defined, it's going to have to solve the problems which are generated by the Web 2.0. Now, Web 2.0 has somewhat been described as a bunch of people who want to do business being a better way of getting together, but more and more it's described as user-generated content. Most of the user-generated content is words. So what we want to do is understand content and find out what it is we want to look at, and then later figure out which of it we believe. Well, there is now linguistic processing capabilities, the like of which I never believed would occur. And just so we have an ability now to extract an understanding structure from that free text, which would allow us to go forth. And I'm going to ask Dr. Prangy here now with preparation to the policy suspended from it. Now, somebody pointed out that the only ones can do it. Yes, that's true. But I think what they can do is extremely impressive. And so I'm going to let the company and its products speak for themselves. Dr. Prangy.
Good morning. As Lucian said, my name is John Prangy, and about a year ago, I retired from the federal government, and after a short hiatus, I corporation, the Richardson Texas Company. I'm based here in the D.C. Area in Columbia. LCC was formed 11 years ago. The two principal visionaries and technical leaders of the company are Dr. Dan Moldovan and Dr. Sahara Baju. I have about 70 research scientists and engineers. As a company, we have focused on human language understanding, the principal focus for the company, and virtually all has come to the government sector. We are in the process of trying to transition some of the technology we developed those 11 years to the commercial marketplace. There are lots of things I could talk about, but I'm going to try to hit on three that I think impact how you get knowledge out of text. The first will be information extraction, then taking advantage of the great structure within human language to extract explicit and implicit knowledge, and then do that. How do you read with what you have extracted? So the first area is information extraction. Two areas of recognition and in the event extraction. The products in the name entity, all Cicero-lite, Cicero multilingual, or machine learning, depending on which you want to take it. The Cicero Lite product is works the best. It works on a finite state framework. We'll have a more rapidly developed system called Cicero MML. It does take advantage of statistical machine learning-based framework. We have very good systems in Arabic and Mandarin Chinese, and are expanding that base. What is unique about our product is we do the eight classes that are very typical within the information name entity extraction community. And we have roughly 150 types, but if you don't see the type that you want, you're multilingual, the tool can add another class or subtype. In Arabic, it's a little more restricted. In Mandarin Chinese, 18 different classes. I wanted to highlight the Cicero custom is a way in which you're not an engineer, and I've actually done this, and I'm not a computer programmer anymore, but I developed an event extraction system on the fly. It took me about 2 hours, and I was getting roughly in the event category about 70% accuracy. That's Cicero custom. Taylor, we have a geospatial normalization process, and we're in the process of expanding those product lines. In extracting rich knowledge from text, we take advantage of the fact that language does have a great deal of structure. It's not just a bag of words, but there's order, there's relationships between those words, and we try to find those in fashion. There are also implicit knowledge in it that is contained in text through sarcasm, humor, opinions, etc. And then there are other very difficult textual phenomena to pull out automatically, things like negation. So our innovations is to try to get at this at a very high level, move up the pyramid as we had to get very deep semantic relations. And to do that, we have a four-layered representation, starting with syntax, then moving up to semantics, context, and then events. It takes two sentences. Gilda Flores' kidnapping occurred on January 13th, 1990, a week before he had fired the kidnappers. At the lexical level, you can get the parts of speech. Parts of speech, and actually start to do words in that Christiana talked about. Moving up to the semantic, we have a semantic parser that identifies 40 different semantic relations. Context, not all information is always universal, and so there may be a temporal context, spatial context. I have a slide later that all the different contexts we're capable of identifying. Events and relationships between events. We take a very broad view of what an event, most verbs are considered as events. But then you need to pull them together in reason, so you need to have relationships about those events, and then maybe actually create a meta event. So that in this example, maybe the ultimate event was that of revenge. So I want to highlight for the tools that we have that allow us automatically. First is a semantic. There are 40 different semantic relations that I do apply and extract from text. This is all done through a machine type algorithms. And so the frequently relationships and theme and other high frequency relations we do very well on. Some of the lower occurring ones have lesser capability. From as a way of identifying semantic relations. And a comparison here, we have a much richer set. The common color, the whatever it is, the pink, is the same name, and the green and the blue are different names within the two sides. As an example, if you take the sentence we're talking about years ago, before anyone heard of asbestos having any questionable properties, if you look at tree bank or prop bank relationships, these were hand tagged. What you see on the right is the output that is generated automatically by our Pilar algorithm. But it's more than just the semantics. You need to be able to extract knowledge from text in a more automated fashion. But we really add flesh to those that skeleton and muscle through the use of use semantic relations. And so we're able to extract dynamically with the technology, we're able to produce what's out of the the steps that allow you to look through that at the description of how we genetically, you actually can create a knowledge base that has concepts, a hierarchy, structural and situational axioms, and other artifacts that are important. The third component in extracting knowledge I want to mention is the things that we have done on top. Back early, I think 2001, Dan Moldovan got a grant from NSF and was able to do an extension on WordNet. He did what took those glosses that Christiana identified for you earlier. We parsed them, WordSense disambiguated them, and then transformed them all into logic form. This is freely available. It's built on top of 2.1. Christiana talks about 3.0 now, so this is not on top of the most current version. That's freely available from UTD. On top of that, within LCC, to help with the very deep reasoning that we do, we take the system that I just talked about in the panic parser, and we have extended WordNet actually into a full-blown knowledge base. So those glosses have been processed by Jaguar, and those the non-glosses have been grouped together in clusters and arranged in a hierarchy using the same hierarchical structure that Christiana talked about in WordNet, and then axioms are extracted. So this is an example of a WordNet gloss for tennis. And these are all the semantic relations that were extracted from that using the PLARS tool. Then using Jaguar, we're able to group these together, or the noun ones, in semantic clusters such as this. So using focus of play, hit, divide, and all of those are connected together with the set. Then the synsets in the set that Christiana talked about are put in a hierarchy. In terms of context and events, not all information that's in human language is universally true. It has some context. And space, and we've really concentrated hard on those. And even with the amount of time that we have spent, we don't, we're really just starting to scratch the surface. But we are moving into other types of context, the other six that are listed here. And once you identify the context, then you start to interpret it within the framework of that context. So for us, events are basically answers to the question, what happened? They're typically verbs and sometimes, so the noun tool, for instance, is not an event, but meeting would be an event. Adjectives are not separate, or we don't consider them as events, but they can be treated loosely. Like verbs are not separate events. Combined with other events as well as aspectual markers and modalities. Our approach to event detection is to go through all the world sets, 117,000 that Christiana had talked about, and identify those which are in fact events. And those we have text, then the detect events are often primarily the lexical lookup. So we get reasonable performance on this, particularly on the precision end. We do still miss some events that aren't identified through the lookup. Stand this, we're trying by actually going into much deeper structures in terms of modeling discourse. And actually try to find roles and sub-events or relationships, the buy-in, and what was your example, Christiane? purchase are examples of our meeting. It has a start time, it has a speaker event, and so forth. The third area that I want to highlight is that of what do you do with this knowledge after you have extracted it? The reasoning inference. And we have tools. I'll talk only about one of them called. To begin, why would you want reasoning, or how can you measure how well you're doing on the reasoning? We participate in a couple of situations in which reasoning and inference play a key role. One of them is the TREC question answering track. TREC, information retrieval primarily conference that is sponsored by the intelligence community and NIST. It's been running since 1992. Question answer started in 1993. And basically, you're given a very large quantity of English language text, a large number of questions. Primarily, the questions now fall in three types: factoid questions, list questions, and other. I have an example on the next slide. So this last evaluation was just conducted this last November. There were 75 sets of questions that were organized around a target. So in this target event, you may remember John Williams was drug behind a truck in Texas, and by the dragging caused his death. There are factors that have specific answers. A question which requires you to respond by giving a set of possible answers as a list. And then other is the catch-all that says, give me information that doesn't cover any of the questions. The second kind of way in which we participate in to evaluate our ability in reasoning and inference is textual entailment. So in this task, which is run by the European text called Pascal RTE, you are given a pair of sentences. One is the text and the other is a hypothesis. And the question is, does the hypothesis, is it inferred by the original text? For example, a positive negative entailment. The first is yes, that Botswana is in fact is a big river, and that is expressed in the given T sentence. In other cases, the entailment is no. The two persons perpetrated dynamite attacks. No, they didn't perpetrate the attacks, they were injured. So the entailment is no. So I'll come back and use these cases to show you how well we have been able to do. More first about Cogex. Cogex starts off taking either the question, a possible answer, or the T and H pair, parsing for them, determines what context is associated with those two sentences, and then converts that into a logical form. In addition to that, those information go off and we generate on the fly temporal axioms, special WordNet axioms that I'll just show you some examples of, and other knowledge-based axioms that we have access to, rules that involve semantic relips that we call a semantic calculus, and into an axiom builder. We then follow that with a logic prover that has utility. Then we rank the potential answer, and we have also the ability to give a language justification for the proof that we have applied. So let me follow through an example, a step-by-step of the different components. The first is the output of the semantic parser. You start with the question and you a potential answer, and you determine all the semantic relationships using Polaris. Then, as word sense disambiguation, process and converting it into sin sets, things are converted into logical forms. Now, we need to have change, lexical change and axioms that will help us in the proof process. And these are generated on demand as required by what it is that we put in via the logical forms. So lexical chains are connections between semantically related concepts. These are word sin sets. Now, there are all kinds of talk on WordNet. It's a very densely connected graph. And so there are all kinds of ways in which different sin sets are connected. You have to be careful to avoid a combinatorial explosion in terms of determining what lexical chains to add in. And I'll get to that on the next slide. Because of the glasses, we're able to talk about clusters that we had formed and the relationship between sin sets in that hierarchy will determine a number of lexical chains involving, say, tennis and players. Now, so one question might involve the word acquired, and another potential answer might have involved purchase. So how could you chain those together? Well, the sin set for acquired includes get, and there is a hypernym relationship with buy and purchase. So we now have a chain between those two words. Same with die and suicide. There are different number of chains that you have to go through and different kinds of relationships that are reflected. Now, one way in which you try to control the process so avoid the combinatorial explosion is by putting constraints on the construction of these chains. And one way is to ensure specific structures along the chain are preserved. So in the first example, Floyd Patterson is the agent, but he's the patient in the second, and so you don't want to create that chain. Whereas in the second one, the theme stays the same across the two sentences, and so you would want to make the lexical chain buy and pay. Other is that you want to extract world knowledge in the form of axioms from the text that you are now processing, or other resources automatically on demand. And so you you use rules that you might have gotten that involve NLP. You have some other trusted source, some encyclopedia or other dictionary or other knowledge sources. We'll hear about psych later. You could use psych as a trusted source. And any other automatically built knowledge base that we've constructed using the Jaguar tool. So these axioms, where do they come from? Well, some of them come from the WordNet axioms. And so you see some examples between kidnap and kidnapper. Asian being Asian and incontinent. From the glosses, you could get the relationship between cat being a small Asiatic wildcat. And other NLP axioms that in some cases the person is referred to by the full name, sometimes by their last name. Then there are other semantic relation that you want to apply. So if you have the statement, Mike is thin, you can also imply through the semantic calculus that Mike is rich. Or that if John lives in Dallas, Texas, he also lives in Texas. And similarly, there are temporal axioms that you can apply, so that if something occurred in October of 2000, it also occurred during the year 2000. Then there are other contextual knowledge axioms. Primarily, right now, these are focused on spatial and temporal. So the first one is a temporal. So if someone boards a plane, a flight for 3 hours, that person is traveling for 3 hours. You can infer that from the context. If the person leaves at the same time and arrives at the same time as the plane. that's more spatial. So once we get all of those axioms for the context that we have, then we go into the logic prover. And this is a first order logic solution style theorem prover. If you know the next letter, but for efficiency purposes, it's based on hyperresolution and paramodulation. We keep those four layers, the syntactic, the semantic, the context, and the event, and things are done separately at each of those levels. And we bring in those axioms on demand. So all of that becomes the set of support. So you take the candidate answers and the negated question, and you go through a proof process to try to get a refutation. And if no contradiction is detected, then there's back-off strategies. So you relax some of the arguments. You go further into lexical change. You drop entire predicates and so forth. And in the process, you calculate a proof score for each of the candidate responses. And then the candidate responses are ranked and so forth. And the proof can then also be given back to the user in either a visual or a graphical form or a natural language form. So how well do we do? Well, I mentioned Trek. This Cogex is part of our Power Answer question answering system, and it, during the last Trek evaluation, was in fact statistically significantly better than any of the other systems. We also had a second question answering system from LCC that uses a different reasoning mechanism, and it was statistically better than every other system except Power Answer. And a system from LCC has placed first in Trek every year since the question answering Trek started in 99. With regard to Pascal, that rich textual entailment task, our other reasoning system called Groundhog actually beat out Cogex, but both of them were significantly better than the other participants in the second challenge. If there's more contact with LCC, you would like to have our home office is in Richardson, Texas, but as I mentioned, I'm located here in Maryland. And I'd be happy in a couple minutes that I have to take any questions.
Performance issues, because there's a lot of
computing
going on here.
Can you repeat the question, please?
Performance. That is a huge concern. I would say that I mentioned the two question answering systems. The Chaucer question answering system will return an answer in probably 20 seconds or less. The Power Answer takes longer. It going through the proof process is a more computationally intense activity. And so you might wait for 45 seconds or maybe a minute. The algorithms are all highly parallelizable. And when we participate in evaluations, for instance, we basically shut down the company, distribute the process across all the computers that we have and process in parallel to get through. We think if the task was right, you either reduce some of the processing. So for instance, we have a version of Power Answer. You can check on the web that runs against Wikipedia. And to get very fast response, we very much minimize the logic prover, because that's a very huge drain.
Right. I've tried that, and I would encourage you to go to their website and try that. It's an interesting thing to do.
That's actually on the LIMBA, not on LYMBA, www.limba.com.
Just to follow up on that, is the second kind of thought is if you were doing something like, we just want to do natural language question answering against some known corpus like a Wikipedia.
Right.
Is there, do these technologies that you're working with also work? I said, you can connect. I've asked a question before, or, you know, someone I can lean on, you know, whatever's happened, you know,
right,
before, which make it faster.
The other question answering system has something called QoBS. And so it automatically generates potential questions that you might have asked. If this was the document, it says that you could have asked this question on this document, and here is the answer. And so when you actually ask your question, it's first matched against the questions that we've already known and generated some answers for, and see how closely they're matched. And so in one pane, you get back those responses. In the other pane, it goes through the process of actually trying to, on the fly, answer the question, so you get both. So yes, we do take advantage of past answers that have been either verified or developed automatically.
Let's thank John with a round of applause, please. And again, you'll have time at the panel session, and Lucian will introduce our final speaker before the panel.